Hi, thanks for joining us today. This is Bonnie Wallace, author of The Hollywood Parents Guide, and today my guest on this podcast is Anthony Mendel.
Hello.
Anthony's a master acting coach and founder of the Anthony Mendel Actor Workshop, which has locations in Los Angeles, New York, Vancouver, London, and Sydney.
Yeah.
His philosophy is radically different from the status quo. He doesn't use scene objective, sense memory, or any of the standard 20th century approaches that most acting schools take as their foundation. Instead, he emphasizes living truthfully in imaginary circumstances. Tony, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. What a great intro. Dum, dum, dum. I was like, can I live up to that? But
so,
yeah.
Your approach to acting, it's really different from the standard ones. Can you explain your philosophy a little bit?
Yeah, you know, I'm reading, it's so weird because I'm reading John Cassavetes' LifeWorks book right now. And for people who don't know, like, John Cassavetes was really the forefather of, like, independent cinema. And he and his wife, Jenna Rollins, maybe young audiences would know her from The Notebook. She played the mom. Or I think she played Rachel McAdams' character as she got older, I think. I don't remember. But she was in that movie. It was directed by John Cassavetes' son, Nick Cassavetes. Anyway,
cool.
So he was really the trailblazer of, like, exploring just living on camera for American directors in the 70s, 60s, 70s. And I just... The opening quote of his book is, acting class, life class is the best acting class. So that's what I teach. And I think that, and I think they reference something like Stanislavski, even Stanislavski, who came up with many different ways to try to, like, get actors to be real. He even just said, I just do whatever I have to do to make people stop acting, basically, right?
Wow.
So I think the truth about acting is that we come up with all these words and definitions and theories and concepts and names for something that is as simple as you and I right now, just listening and talking. So the heart of it is all listening. And, you know, I think people get stuck on the mechanics of something, but we're not fixing the inner workings of a car. We're not mechanics. You don't have to be a mechanic. Mechanics are for mechanics. Like, we just have to try to tell the truth, which is very, very difficult.
Yeah.
But I find that if we do away with a lot of the things that puts people in their heads, they're already more predisposed to do it naturally. So, you know, I'm just not invested in calling it something, because I find that, you know, you have a daughter who's in the business, you have another daughter who's a musician. I find that whether they're painters or writers or actors or singers, it's literally about the person igniting their art through themselves. So that's what I teach. Be you, really, which
yeah.
is really very difficult to be.
I love that. We were talking earlier, and I shared with you my philosophy about acting, which is that, you know, the actors is like their soul, their spirit is like the light that shines through the gel, and the gel is the character.
That's right.
And I shared that with you because I feel like that's basically, you know, in saying be you, be who you are, shine that through maybe the circumstances, the imaginary circumstances
yeah.
you find yourself in a scene. That resonated
yeah,
for
that's
me.
A, yeah, that's a beautiful way of articulating it. So Gary Oldman says something similar about, you know, the characters that you're playing are just basically prisms of yourself. That's all it is. And he says, you know, when it says that a character is crying in the script, or you go and see the movie and you see a character crying, he's like, it's not the character crying. It's me, Gary Oldman, crying. So that's the big leap that I think we're more and more actors are starting to have. You know, that's Gary Oldman, and he's been around forever. And so you start to see that the distillation of it, the talking about it in a way that moves beyond the concepts, and you can see it very clearly, that we're not, you can't become someone else. It's physically, the physics make that impossible.
Well, and there's a kind of a psychosis to that, too. Mm. It's like, you know, you really are still you.
Uh-huh.
The crying
that's
is where
point.
You are.
Yeah.
You know, I watched my kid do a very emotional scene a couple of weeks ago, and you could tell her whole body was
engaged.
Involved
yeah.
and engaged in those feelings and those emotions. And it was real. Her
yeah.
body was experiencing it in a very real way. And the tears were real. And that was her. That wasn't really her character.
Well, another way of thinking about it is when we're watching them, the final edited program, movie, TV show, theater, whatever, the piece, the play, we're involved in the story. So we're seeing the character, you know, the storytelling is occurring through the person playing the character. But when we surrender to the circumstances in the story, then it's a subjective experience,
right?
So we're imprinting on whatever it is that we're watching, filling in the blanks of who we think these people are or aren't. Mm-hmm. So that to me is where a lot of the character development really occurs. So when you're watching your daughter and you know that she's crying, if I don't know your daughter and I go watch the movie and I see her crying as quote unquote the character, yes, of course, I'm watching the story unfold and she's doing it authentically. Mm-hmm. So I've surrendered to that narrative.
Right.
But it's still her.
Mm-hmm.
It's not Dove. It's Dove as Julie.
Right.
It's Dove as Sabrina. It's Dove as whatever the character's name is.
Yeah.
So that's the big thing that I get people, I think those are huge light bulbs. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I had a guy last night in an intro class where he's never taken an acting class before. And again, his concepts of it. So he gets up and he tries to show us the idea of a guy who's nervous or a guy who's, right? So he's acting.
The idea of it, that's so well put.
Totally, but that's what people do. They play the idea of who they think the characters look like.
Yeah.
And I get it because we have to come from making a choice and we have to go for something. We have to understand the scene and figure out a way of how we're going to live in it. But I have found that if the actor is trained to listen, listening naturally evokes a response, a natural, authentic response in the moment. And so to me, 95% of the heavy lifting is about, you know, John Cassavetes' book says that as well. It's like the best actors are the best listeners because the listening will do it for you. If I tell you some tragic news, we just heard some tragic news, you still have a response to it.
Yeah.
The listening does it.
It's physical.
Physiological, emotional, psychological, historical. So the things that actors think they need to play, if they would just listen, it's going to do it for them.
Yeah.
But we're not, I think, A, we're not taught to listen. And I also think we think listening is so easy. It's so hard to listen. Do you know what I mean? It's really hard to just be. It's being.
People, they get in their heads and not really present.
Yeah,
so really what you're talking about to me is about being present, and listening is like a subset of that.
Yeah.
And people don't know how to be present. I mean, that's an issue for human beings in general, not just actors.
No, I think it's getting worse because of the phones. Mm-hmm. Look at Pokemon. Mm-hmm. I mean, two people fell off a cliff, I heard, and died. Yeah. Playing this, two guys in Oceanside, I think it was, somewhere in Northern California.
Oh my God.
Right? So, I mean, I know that's an extreme example, but it's not. It's sort of like, instead of being in the real world, the real world isn't enough, so we have to make up worlds, a virtual world. Mm-hmm. I don't understand that, really. But I'm older, obviously, so I didn't come of age in a generation where my life is really filtered through a device. But it's not real. It's just not real. And
well,
I think, but that's a whole other...
Yeah, that is a whole other conversation, which is a worthy conversation. But I do think that that's a danger for any of us at any age. I mean, look, I'm in my 50s, and I am as capable as a teenager of falling down
getting
that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
I think it's something that just really, you know, resonates with humans, and there's a kind of addictive quality to it that is, I think, because we have a predisposition to not be present. Hello. Because it can be uncomfortable to be present sometimes.
Well, yes, but Bonnie, I don't see. I think the truth is the DNA, the spirit of who we are, is presence.
Mm.
We are presence. Now, we live now in a culture that it's distracted by nature, but I think it's also because all the companies that promote their products that do that want us to be distracted. It's if you start to like pull it apart, you begin to see that I'm not a conspiracy theorist, yeah. So I'm not that extreme, but it is fascinating when you think about how the media sort of lulls us into whatever it is that we can be sort of brainwashed into believing.
Well, it's easier to manipulate somebody
if they're
not present and if they're off balance. And it's much, much easier to stay balanced and literally grounded if you can be present, which is, of course, a beautiful way to live your days.
Mm.
And makes for better performances if you're an actor. How did you get involved with all this? How did you end up being, you know, an acting coach and having all these schools?
Well, I think, you know, for me, I was an actor myself, and I was trained every kind of methodology in the book, and I was working, and I was doing really well when I moved to LA, and But I found that my own exploration of sort of what is acting? What is it? What is living? What is being human? You know what I mean? What is this thing that we're doing that we're trying to capture on film or on TV or wherever in a non-actory way? What is this? What are the mechanics of it? What is the process of it? How do we find a way in that doesn't feel like it becomes false or academic or presented, right? And I don't know, I just began to discover that for me, my own spiritual evolution, and I've been to India a number of times and reading a lot of books on science, and I found that they're all dovetailing. We're living in a, you know, as crazy as the world is right now, it's also technology. The beautiful thing about technology is we have access to information scientifically that we didn't have like 20 years ago. So like they talk about, you know, brain scans can show what happens, parts of our brain that are lit up creatively when we meditate. And that's the same stuff that is lit up when we are present and creating in the moment. And so you begin to start these correlations between presence and joy and listening and intuition and instinct. All that stuff is, to me, the foundation of what I teach. And so it's spiritual. It's acting. It's a philosophy of acting. It's a philosophy into a way of life. It's physics. It's, you know what I mean? So I find that to be speaking about, you know, on the way here, I was thinking what I really am about too is, even though we talk about acting in terms of understanding some simple concepts that I think everybody has to understand, right? Because they're given circumstances of a scene. But I really think our program is about the humanitarian aspect of what it means to be an artist. It's like you have to be curious about the world and the social, sort of the, it's sort of, I don't know, that to me is very exciting, is that we don't, the conversations we have are like about Black Lives Matter and about tragedies of terrorism and about empathy and compassion and ethos. And we're not talking about what is your objective in the scene. It's so derivative.
Well, if you're living your life, you're not stopping and asking yourself what your objective is as you walk into the room with somebody.
That's totally it. You see, you should guest teach at the school. This is what right now my objective is not, I don't even think about my objective. We're working moment to moment.
We're just present.
Right? That's totally it. So all I teach is that. Those are the grounding scientific principles of how the entire world works. The only difference is we're saying someone else's words besides our own words. That's the only difference. Mm-hmm. But to do that is very difficult. You know, I like to say that what I teach is so simple, it's just not easy.
Ooh, I like that.
But the understanding of acting, I cannot make it any more understandable than I think we're doing. And that's beautiful. And the older I get, it's like, you know, I mean, listen, I love actors. My whole life is about the arts. However, I think we're so much more powerful. I mean, art is a vehicle for expressing the power of our humanity. But who we really are is the power is in our humanity. It is in being human. In the face of tragedy, how do we face that with vigilance and compassion and peace, although creating activism? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think that that is the power of being a part of a studio or a movement or a philosophy. It's actually a philosophy based on love. Like, I'm totally going to start crying. That's like, it's really what it is, you know? So it's really, to all your listeners, I'm crying right now.
But it's beautiful.
But that's what I teach.
Because you are speaking to, you know, the sacred work of being a human being.
Yeah.
And to me, part of what excites me about the work that you're engaged in and that the people who work with you are engaged in is the fact that it is a deep reflection of the sacredness of theater for culture.
Mm-hmm. Coming together, telling stories, storytelling.
Yeah. It's how we communicate what it is to be human, basically.
Totally, yeah.
And that's why being an actor at its best, at its highest, is a true calling. Because you are called upon to live transparently, live so that others may see what it is to be human. I mean, what a high calling.
Well, you know, I think the challenge, Bonnie, about that is that most, especially young actors, myself included when I was in my 20s, and what we try to help them understand is that I think a lot of us don't believe that our stories are A, anybody's going to be interested in them. B, they're worth telling. And C, that they actually bring value. But the only story that brings value is your story. And then what happens is when you tell your story personally through the work, talking about it, sharing your challenges, your hopes, your dreams, your tribulations, your stuff, even though it's very personal to you, also becomes universal. It's all the same.
It's like poetry, you know, which is totally my background. It's like the universal is always found in the particular.
That's totally it. But for young people to not... I was never taught that. That who I was as Tony, as my story, is more valuable than the story I'm making up about my character. The character story can only come alive by me being brave enough to find the intersection where I meet with this person's story. And you know, the irony, the simplicity of it is, a character story is already written on a page for, I don't know, 80 pages, 90 pages of a script. 10 different actors, by bringing themselves to that story, are going to do it different. So then we just have to decide, well, whose essence or whose energy most matches it. So that's really how simple it is. But you've got to be brave enough to realize, this is how I want to tell the story. This is how I would play that character. And that means through you. So that's a huge departure, I think, from... I think a lot of acting traditional methodologies, although I'll just say one last thing. I think all acting methodologies are really trying to say that. They just get lost in the nomenclature. Good word. They get lost in the theoretical, the academic. So they make it be about something else and then they lose the thread.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That to me is what's so frustrating about it all. Is like, I think the purity of all acting methodologies is there, but somehow, just like anything... Like, look at Republicans and Democrats. Like, I think probably the purity of what maybe being a Republican used to mean, you can tell I'm a Democrat, but you get what I'm saying? About not big government and about, you know, not getting involved. I guess I understand that. But somehow that's been corrupted,
right,
and co-opted and distorted,
mm-hmm,
and become a marginalizing thing. So... See, I cannot not teach without being political or philosophical, because those things speak to me the way that I work.
Well,
but
that's part of the human experience.
That's it. Yeah,
you
that's
can't
it.
Exclude that stuff if
yeah.
it's going to stay authentic.
But then we have to be very careful, because that's how it gets distorted. And then it gets told in a way that becomes an agenda. It becomes about... some people are empowered by it while other people are, you know, disenfranchised.
Yeah.
So that's my thing about teaching, that you know, you have to, my thing is like, it's always evolving. So why would I be teaching the same thing that, it doesn't make any sense. Why are, this is my own personal opinion. I can't teach something that was being taught in the 1900s. It's 2016. Now we can go back to the source material, and all things come from the beginning. All things come from Greek, you know, our Greek ancestors who were telling plays. But the way the instrument has changed, the needs for actors have changed.
The
storytelling
has changed.
Yes, it's all changed.
Mm-hmm.
And Einstein, all scientists talk about, it's the world we're living in is constantly evolving and expanding. And so why would teachings about anything not continue to expand? If we have the technology to show that it's evolving, I can't hold on to those. The world is not flat, people. There you go, mic drop.
What?
You know what I mean? Dinosaurs, I have to just say this because I saw this on the news. Did you hear this? They just did, God. See, look at, I'm so like... I'm
right.
So polarizing in many ways, but I love that about me. It's
but
like, I just like...
Okay.
I know. No, it's fun. You know that they built a Noah's Ark museum in Kentucky, so it's fine, whatever, it's great. But the thing that I find so interesting is that on display there are dinosaurs. So apparently dinosaurs, two by two, were a part of all the mammals, and also Noah and his family. But interesting, there were no T-Rexes. Listen, as long as it's being used for love, faith. You know, you talk about it in your book, which I love, about faith and resilience. It's a beautiful chapter, and it talks about, you know, what not only young performers have to and parents have to do with their children coming to Hollywood to have faith and resilience, because it takes forever, but adults as well, all of us, you know what I mean, through life. So I understand it, but I think when we begin to, again, distort philosophies where people are segregated or prejudiced against, then it becomes a really slippery slope, you know?
Oh, yeah, it's dangerous. Yeah, it's dangerous, and it has real and terrible consequences.
Look, see, this isn't even about acting. This is what I love about it.
this is about life.
Yeah, this is what's exciting about it.
Well, so you come from a very strongly held, distinct philosophy. How do you translate that into your acting workshops in all of these schools? What do you do in those workshops? How does that work?
Well, I mean, the work, even though I talk about, you know, bigger things, they're always very, very personal. And I think it's really about changing paradigms about how we hold ourselves. That's the big work. If you're listening in a scene in the way that this technique, the way that we work, makes happen for you, you're going to start changing. In other words, you're going to start feeling things that normally in your day-to-day life you do not allow yourself to feel. So for some people, it might be getting angry. For somebody else, it might be getting in touch with repressed sexuality. For somebody else, it might be just having fun. For somebody else, it might be being physical. So the beautiful thing about listening, again, is that it's going to start triggering your stuff. And what the teaching is about is, you know, science talks about this. Without awareness, there can't be change. So it's all awareness-based first. So you discover in the moment, in your work, oh my gosh, I start to feel X, and I don't want to feel X, so why? Yeah. And then you start to see in life when something happens, and you start to feel X, right?
I love this.
Like last night I was teaching this intro, and this girl in her scene has no feeling yet. And she's 21, right? Now, obviously she's a feeling being, I can see it, but she completely compresses it and shuts it down. It's like putting a cork on a champagne bottle. And I said to her, I was like, Ashley, so what do you do with feeling? And she's like, oh, I just, you know, it's all shoved down until it explodes. So the work then is to learn how to have a new relationship with our feeling.
Right.
And that starts to get exercised through the work and our life. So it's just like any other scene study class, cold reading class, audition class, on-camera class, our way in has less to do about talking about the window dressing and instead just cleaning up the window so you can see through it, the transparency you're talking about. You just got to get honest with yourself, you know?
I really like that. I've been thinking a lot recently about how critical it is for actors to be completely in touch with all of their emotions, because as you said, if any of it's blocked, you can't experience it, and therefore you can't portray it.
That's totally it.
You know, and so you need to be an incredibly evolved, emotional human being, I think, to be a fine actor.
That's totally it. Al Pacino, I think in my first book, I have an Al Pacino quote where he was being interviewed by Katie Couric, and she asked him, well, how do you play all these, you know, you play such explosive characters and blah, blah, blah. And he just says, well, you just get in touch with the primalness of what it means to be alive. And every single human being walking on the planet at some point wants to explode or implode and you could see, I remember that. I watched the video of it. I remember Katie Couric's eyes got really big. Like that doesn't register in her being.
She has no space for that possibility.
Exactly. Well, it's there because she's human, but her logical mind turns that off. Mm-hmm. But that's why he's great, because he can acknowledge. That's the other thing, is like helping actors to stop judging. There's no place for judgment in acting, in any art, I think, because it's incompatible with creativity. Real quantum creativity, real full-on optimal creativity comes from you are a channel for it. So if I'm pinching off the channel, then I'm not working optimally. So what we try to do is just create a space. It's very safe and very nurturing, and it's non-judgmental. And you begin to see like, well, why am I judging all these parts of myself? I'm human. It's okay for me to think terrible thoughts. It doesn't mean I'm a terrible person.
Or that I'm going to act on them.
That too. Yeah. I think we live in a very shame-based culture. You know, I think maybe in many ways, again, I think because of our religious history is very puritanical. You know, when Plymouth Rock was founded and how that still has, I think, really dramatic underpinnings of shame and judgment about, You know, the difference between, I think, sometimes Americans and Europeans, I think Europeans are a lot more fluid in certain ways, sexually and self-expression, and you know what I mean?
All of that,
yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
There's a lot more space to be who you are,
yeah,
over there, I've noticed.
So
that.
Different cultures allow different things,
mm-hmm,
you know what I mean? And
mm-hmm,
so I think that to me, that's a big thing as I've gotten older too, like, even in my 40s now, like, why I have shame around certain stuff, you know, and trying to open space to, you know, the difference between guilt and shame is, you know, we may do something and be able to see, oh, well, that was just like a silly act, or I didn't really use my head with that, or that was kind of dumb. And that's just like making amends for it and realizing you didn't think it out. And that's guilt, and it's processed and released. Shame, you become the jerk, you become the stupid head, you,
yeah,
become, you know, you start to shame yourself believing you are the act. So it's really getting people in touch with their feelings.
That's powerful. That sounds
it's
like
intense,
a lot of people,
yeah,
who don't even want to be actors might benefit
oh,
from
it. Oh gosh, yeah, no, I get people, you know, I just was at my dentist yesterday and my dental hygienist, and she's like, can I just come and take class, just one or two classes? I just want to sit in and listen to you lecture. And she has no desire to act. She,
yeah,
just, and it means a lot to me. And, you know, I think good teachings are universal. So it shouldn't just be about acting. It's,
mm-hmm,
not about acting.
Mm-hmm.
Good God.
So in addition to your work that you make available through different levels of classes, which, you know, your website is just like so rich. There's so many different offerings. You also do regular workshops with casting directors,
mm-hmm,
and agents.
Mm-hmm.
They come in and they do workshops,
mm-hmm,
under your auspices. So what value do you think lies in having those guys come in? What does that do for your students?
Well, as you know, again, you talk about it in the book. Like, I think you got to get seen, and it's great to get not different opinions about necessarily your work, because it's going to be subjective. You could meet me and not like me. Somebody else could meet me and love my work. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it just may be because I remind you of your ex. I don't know.
Exactly.
So I think it's important for actors to get in front of people who are making decisions for casting or producing or whatever. But maybe more valuable is they're just getting insight about the business, you know? And my thing always is I work with this group that comes from overseas, and they do like a 2-week, it's called Industry Hollywood. It's a really great group from, and they basically bring like 20 students over who are in the process of maybe getting their green card. So he helps a lot with immigration, and
yeah,
they go and
huge.
Meet a lawyer, and then they take different workshops in town, and they always work with me. And my thing is I think it's so amazing to meet agents and managers and casting directors, just meet everybody, but also take everything with a grain of salt, because everybody is working from their own agenda. You know what I mean? And for every absolute, you discover there are no absolutes. But information is really important, I think, especially if you're starting out and you really, you know, how do I fill in the blank?
Yeah.
Well, you go and you keep meeting people and hearing what, you know what I mean?
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah,
I mean, there's so much mystique.
About that in the book. Yeah.
There's so much mystique around it, and it's so abstract and therefore, you know, scary, frankly.
Yeah. It's overwhelming.
You don't know. It's totally overwhelming.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the more you get a chance to, you know, get in front of, as you say, and meet with these people, it's like, oh, they're just really people. They're just doing their best to do their job, and it's safe and it's okay. And you can learn some things.
And as Margot Robbie just said in an article, I have this in both books, but you know, my philosophy is nobody knows, and she used the swear word basically, which I won't use here, but she's basically like, she discovered getting to the top that nobody knows. And what she means by that is you come to set, or you're at where you are in your career, and you realize like everybody's just trying to figure it out. And I think that is a real healthy way of stop putting so much pressure on yourself of having to have all the answers before you make the move, or before you get your headshot, or before you take the class, or before you book the job. You're never going to have it all together. And I think the best people come together and realize and admit they don't know, and then figure it out together. Just like what we're doing right now. It's collaborative.
I love that.
So nobody knows. You know what I mean?
Beep. So
yeah.
You have worked with some incredible
I've had some great people
actors.
In my life. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Shailene Woodley.
Oh, I love Shailene.
Corey Montes.
Oh, you know, it just was the 3-year anniversary of his passing. Just yesterday, 2 days ago, July 13th, I think. Sorry, I didn't mean
that. No, it's okay, but that's the thing. It's we become involved with people that we care about, and
it's so bizarre to think he's gone.
Yeah, no, it's I mean, some of that stuff never really, you can't really ever get over it. But these extraordinary artists, most of whom luckily are still with us.
Yes.
They are still working with you, a lot of them. It's not like they worked with you before they got somewhere and then that was like done. They're still involved with you, a lot of these guys.
You know, I just coached Ruby Rose the other day for something. She's up for a big movie. She's got a couple, three big movies coming out next year. You know, Shailene is an amazing, to me, example of, she was just in class a couple months ago before she went stumping for Bernie Sanders. I just really respect her wanting to be engaged in social causes. Again, I think it's a lot of, that's her own constitution, but also, again, what the school's about. But, you know, I think it's so brave to be at the top of your game. And she was back in class in April, March and April, and she's working in front of 80, 90 people who are observing, and she's falling flat on her face. That's, like, huge. You know what I mean?
It's brave.
It's really brave. And yet she's, you have to be able to take those kind of risks and leaps, you know what I mean? And I think the important thing that I always talk about, for myself included, and this is why I always approach teaching from this way, is you have to approach everything as a beginner. Because if you think you know, you're screwed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even in my teaching, if I were to teach you, you're different than Shailene. So I'm not applying the way I work with Shailene with you. Mm-hmm. Your needs and temperament and energy is, you're different. So I'm just working on getting more of you. So I can't approach something from my previous knowing. Does that make sense? It's it's beginner's mind, Buddhist mind.
It's very spiritual.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, you've recently started working with kids.
Yes.
Now, that's new for you, right?
Yes.
I'm totally excited.
We just started
about
last
that.
Week. We just started. Well, we've done it on and off, but now we have a regular program. We have a designated teen ongoing class on Thursday nights, which is great. A lot of working teens in that group. But now we have, we just started a summer intensive, and they just started last week. So we have a preteen class up to the age of 11, I think, or 12, and then we have a 13 to 17 or 18 year old group. And it's full, so it's exciting. And you know, it's ironic that I haven't, you know, we talked about this when you and I had coffee, but I'm known for working with so many teens, starting them off, so I don't know why I never really, you know, put two and two together. Maybe because I'm great with kids. I just can't do it.
No,
so I was like, I can't take something else on. But I think it's so important for young adults, kids and young adults, and for parents to understand that it's about staying a child in the work. It's about becoming a child, staying a child, working from a child, curiosity, play, non-judgment. I was just with my 7-year-old niece this past week in my hometown. Just watching her, there's no filter, that expression. So we teach from, kids already know, they're already codified to do exactly perfectly what they need to do, because they're only going to be playing themselves at that age anyway.
Yeah.
So the acting, quote unquote, class that they need is really a class that's supporting them in being more of themselves.
Mm.
So some kids might be a little bit more shy, so maybe we have to get them to be a little less shy. And some kids may, you know, grandstand or be show-offs, and so maybe we have to find the balance of, like, reining that in, but still keeping the essential energy of what makes them spirited and funny and out there alive. So our work has less to do with training kids how to act. That's the worst thing. It's just getting them to play and be, especially with kids. How would you, if it's a scene where you're talking to your mom about wanting to go to the concert and you're an 11 or 12 year old girl, how would you do it? How would you go and ask your mom?
Every way that it took until I got the answer I wanted.
I saw it. You were like, it brought back memories. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
They're like, Mom! But kids aren't taught that. It's that simple.
Yeah.
Kids are just playing kids. It's so maddening to me. Like, and I also think it's really dangerous if you start to try to mold kids in the name of an acting methodology. Let them be who they are.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I do agree with that.
And why is it that all these movies that are successful with young kids, most of them have never taken an acting class? I was interviewed by the Hollywood Reporter for, She was in, I keep thinking Beast of No Nation, but he was also plucked from obscurity. Beast of the Southern Wild. And that 8-year-old girl. Yeah. But she, again, no acting experience, and they were asking, like, well, should a child... They interviewed me about, well, should a child be considered for, I think she got nominated for an Academy Award, but, you know, is that like the work, just because you're playing yourself, is that the work? And I was like, heck yes. That's all it is. Mm-hmm. Being yourself is the hardest thing to be. Mm-hmm. Why is that any less so? Because she's an 8-year-old girl.
Well, and so let's tease this apart, because this is going to be confusing to a lot of people. It's like, well, I'm myself every day. So is everybody else out there. Mm-hmm. So how come all those people aren't really actors, or like can't act or wouldn't be good actors? Like there's a distinction in there somewhere.
Well, that's a good question. Sometimes I get this, so we start with this foundation of it's you all the time. It has to be you. And we have to start with that, you listening in those circumstances. And as we advance in the work, so the technique is based on always listening as you in these circumstances. But then as we advance, sometimes a student will fight me and they'll be like, well, Tony, you're telling me to do it like I would, and this is exactly how I would do it. And I was like, no, wait a minute. So what you start to see is that a lot of times as we progress, we start to see how we respond to things in life and in our work from a place of protection, self-defense, defaulting out of it, negating, shutting down. None of those things work in a storytelling way.
So being ourselves isn't necessarily going to lead to good acting.
Well, it is, because it's all you're ever going to have.
Okay.
But then technique is born out of removing the blocks and the withholds and the patterns that keep you from being fully expressed. You know, Juliette Binoche talks about this. Marianne Cotard talks about this, that they say that acting can't be taught, but what you can learn is how to feel and use your emotions.
Fully.
So that's the truth. So if I am in life, somebody yells at me and I shut down completely and just say, okay. And then I'm doing a scene where there's a huge amount of, you know, conflict and I shut down, that's not going to be enough. So we have to look at how do we open you up to not shutting down. So that's the real work.
That's the training.
That's it. That's all it is.
But that's a lot.
Lot. This is why it's so simple. But not easy.
Yeah.
Because it takes, sometimes I'm working with people who 20 years have put something in place having to unravel that. And they're like, after, you know, 3 months, they're like, oh, it should be happening faster or whatever. I'm like, honey child, I'm working against 20 years of, you know, habits.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's what's exciting about it. It's like detective work in a way.
So, you've also written several books.
I have. Two are right here. Bestsellers!
I'm so excited to read these. So, I haven't read them yet, but I will be reading them this week. Book the effing job.
I know, I need to have a preteen kids version. Just book the job.
We need a kids version of this, Tony.
I know. I don't use the word that much in the book. Just, we thought it was a good... It's so true.
It gets your attention.
Well, also because one of the chapters is, to me, you have to be in a effort in life.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You just have to be in, like, I don't care anymore. Now, that doesn't mean you don't show up and you're not professional and you're not... accountable. It just means I'm not going to worry so much about what everybody thinks.
Maybe it's about being in a state of like non-attachment,
exactly.
In a Buddhist sort of sense.
Yeah. But that's not as exciting as book the unattached.
Book the
unattached, unletting go Buddhistic job.
That wouldn't sell as many books.
But that is exactly my philosophy. You're right.
Well, I do think there's a lot of truth to that. I love to tell the story about how, you know, Dove got the role for Liv and Maddie. She went in there and she told me point blank in the waiting room. She says, "Look, I know what they want me to do for this, and I'm not going to do it because I don't want to do it that way. And if I did it the way I didn't want to do, and then I booked it, I'd be in trouble, because then I'd be having to play something I didn't really feel resonant with for who knows how long. And then if I don't get it, I'll kick myself because I
didn't
something that was inauthentic
and didn't get it.
She says, I'm going to do it my way.
And that's why
they're going to like it if they don't, and I don't care.
This is the key. That's the breakthrough.
It was amazing.
And the thing is, I'm always telling Bonnie, is they don't know what they want. Even if they give you, once they give you the breakdown or the brief or whatever you want to call it, and those are concepts and ideas and adjectives and descriptions on a page, and then the actor goes in and tries to play those things, and I keep telling you, or tell the actor, those things are one-dimensional, two-dimensional words. They become a living, breathing thing when you discover and know that you are those things. You are edgy and funny and weird and angry and sophisticated. And even if you don't think you are all those things. So don't show them. Be your way of being it.
That's beautiful.
And then their idea of what they think it is, meaning the casting director, again, they don't know until it's in front of them. But most actors go in, well, she's supposed to be like that. Or they ask, "How is this what you're looking for?"
Right.
You're
and then screwed. They try to fit themselves into some pretzel-like
yes,
shape.
Yes, this is why your daughter
unnatural.
Got it. I love the story you say in your book about, it made me laugh about the mud girl. That she couldn't, well, she's like, well, if I can't be a mud girl, isn't that mud girl?
Mud-covered girl.
The mud-covered girl.
If I can't be mud-covered girl.
If I can't be the mud-covered girl, then I might as well give up.
I mean, toss it in.
It's so true.
And then shameless cast her the next day. That was great. But it's true. And you can't give up. If it's your calling, it's your calling, like anything else in life.
Yeah.
I can't wait to read that. And then you've got this other book, At Left Brain Turn
Right. That was
my
first book. Yeah.
That looks really cool. Can you tell me about that a little
bit? Yeah, listen, none of my books are really acting books, although the most recent one is questions that I've always been asked about acting. So like, what is an objective, or how do I get an agent? So I deal with those kind of very, what would we call those?
Essential.
Questions? Industry questions. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Technique questions, industry questions, essential questions.
Questions that people know they have.
About the business and about the art of it. But my answers are a lot more like we're talking here today. They go into much more depth, but simplicity. But this book, even though I talk about acting, I use acting as a metaphor for why we get in our own way creatively. So that it has really kind of crossed platforms and become like a, we've sold, it's been really amazing. I've gotten responses from people all over the world who aren't actors, who are like, the book has changed my life. And there's this famous musician in London who Instagrammed it. I mean, has millions of followers, and I don't even know who he is. And he just has a picture of the book, and it was like so amazing. Like, you know, so I want it to be a creative calling for people.
Well, there's so many of us out there who are creatives, and some of us know it and some of us don't. I'm a creative, and at this point in my life, that has expressed itself in a whole bunch of very different ways.
Yeah.
And the world isn't really set up for us as much as it is set up for the right brain people, right? Or the left brain people. See, I cross those
left
in my
brain.
Mind because
yeah.
I...
Although there is
a little bit that
there
way.
Is a book that came out that Oprah had on her book club many years ago called Why the Right Brainers Will Rule the World.
Yes.
And I do think we're moving into that because technology, apps, a lot of these things, look at Instagram, Twitter, all these things really come from a creative think tank.
Yep.
Now, the application and the unfolding of it has to be done from a data perspective or search engine optimization perspective or whatever it is, right? The engineering aspect of it. Mm-hmm. But I think we are living in a very exciting creative time.
Well, it's more and more rewarding to be a right brain person these days, and we are going in that direction. And it's exciting because, I mean, just as in every other part of being a human, like we need all the male and the female to be expressed.
Totally
we need the left and the right to be fully expressed. We need everybody to bring everything they've got to the table so we can get the work done that we need to get done. So I'm super excited to read that. And also
thank you
for writing it because you know what? We need more of those kinds of books out there.
Thank you.
Now veering completely back to our conversation about acting and casting and the business and all that, I get asked a lot, you know, what are some of the differences between acting for film versus acting for TV? you know, what are some similarities? Like, do you even like to go there because your philosophy is like, well, it's all about being present.
That's all it is. You know, and acting is acting is acting. I think the only reason why there is a distinction between one medium or the other, meaning theater and anything that isn't theater, mm-hmm. is because theater is taught incorrectly. Mm. So theater is taught to project and be theatrical. And you can't be that when you're in front of like a camera is like a foot away from your face.
Yeah, people don't buy that.
Right? But that's how theater is taught. So my thing is, beyond the projection part, which is sometimes we have to do, although everybody's mic nowadays, the truth is, you know, I actually think I mentioned it in the book as well. I'll never forget in the New York Times chief critic, Ben Brantley, was reviewing a revival of A Lie of the Mind, I think. And it was Ethan Hawke and I think his theater company. And he was saying how he was so amazed by watching it because it seemed like they were saying their lines for the first time, and it was so in the moment. And I was like, well, good God, this is what's so sad about theater, is that that's the exception, that he has to spend a paragraph talking about it, because most things are phoned in. Most things are, I've memorized my lines a certain way, and now I'm just going to project them because I said them this way. You go to the theater sometimes and you realize, these are Broadway shows, you hear people talking like this, but you're like, wait a minute. If I asked you, would you like a cup of coffee? In real life, you wouldn't say, yes, I would like coffee. You'd say, yeah, I'd love some coffee. The inflection, the tonality, the heart part that surrounds the text comes from listening, not memorizing the lines.
That I love that you brought that up, because that is something that I've seen personally. I've seen it in filming. TV film. And you see these actors show up and they will, in every take, do the same inflection, the same cadences, the same tone. And it's like, wouldn't it be better to be present and do it a little bit differently each time?
No, it's too scary for people. And they're taught to control it. So they think they're doing good work because they're controlling the way they say something. Or they're never taught to listen. But the thing is, Bonnie, about TV and film is because it's an editing medium, they can get around it and build the performance in many different ways. But in theater, since it's happening moment to moment in real time, you start to see it. But it's just so, I don't know, incredulous to me that it's beautiful that he commented, like, wow, they feel so real and alive in the moment. But it's a sad commentary on how much is not. And that, to me, is theatrical training. Mm-hmm. So my thing is just be taught correctly. Meryl Streep never took 10 different 1,000 acting classes. That's the other thing that's happened. I mean, whatever. Maybe we're living in a time of, what would you call that? Fragmentation or... micro niche specialization. Mm-hmm. But, you know, good acting training is going to cover all bases. You know, it's like, now you have to take an acting class for this, and then an acting class for this, and an acting class for understanding how your eyes go, and an acting class for don't stand pigeon-toed, and an acting class for elocution on text, and execute. You know what I mean? It's like crazy town, and the actor will go from class to class to class to class to class to class. I don't understand it.
Yeah.
Find a great class. It doesn't have to be our studio. Find a great class that kicks your butt consistently. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
It
challenges you to grow and be better.
Why is it that hard? I don't understand. And then you're going to grow as a person and an actor and a human being, get more confident.
So okay.
I'm really crazy.
This is so great.
I just had coffee to your audience.
Bonnie
just made me like crystal meth infused coffee.
I make good strong coffee. It's organic. So perfect. This, in the same vein, there are people who teach audition classes.
Yes.
Now, I'm not looking to tear everybody down here, but it does seem like approaching an audition might require a little. Nope, same.
Well, I mean, again, I'm a filmmaker. I'm making projects. I have a lot of really great friends who are casting directors. I think the challenge is, I have two thoughts about that. Is, first of all, every casting director I know tells me the same thing, which is oftentimes actors are schooled to the hilt, where they come in and they execute perfectly. So they execute audition technique perfectly, but nobody wants to see that.
Mm.
It's not on the lines. It's what's going on in between the lines, which again comes back to listening. So it's fine. Like, if you feel like it's a different animal, and everybody says it is a different animal, but I don't think it's a different animal. It's, again, you being brave enough to go in and do it your own way. And if you do that consistently, eventually you're going to book. You just will, because you're you know, something is happening in the room that they pick up on. You know, there's a woman. Oh God, Ellen Langer is her name, I believe, and she is a sociologist at Harvard, and her research is so fascinating. I'm so inspired by a lot of these people who have TED Talks. I can send you some of her stuff.
I would love that. Yeah. Maybe we can include it in the show notes.
Yeah. It's Ellen Langer. And she does work on the power of, again, the power of presence. And she's not an active teacher. She's a sociologist. And I think she calls it imprinting. And what I think is you're leaving your footprint, your emotional presence footprint, everywhere you go. And she talks about how one of her studies, which I think is so amazing and is the correlation to what I teach and the power of the moment, is she has a control group and an experimental group. And she has the control group. They're doing like it's a classical symphony. And they're playing, let's say Stravinsky. I don't know what it is, but they're playing a classical piece, and they play it exactly as they've been taught and exactly note for note, meter for meter. So the way they should always, you know, good schooling.
The right way.
So that's the control group. Then she has the experimental group that is allowed to, in the moment, based on feeling, intuition, who knows what we call it.
Listening to what else is going on around
all of it, right? Slightly imbue it with whatever they feel in the moment. The research that came out of that is so outstanding. So what ends up happening is then they play, this isn't even, so they record them, and then they play these back to whoever her, well, I don't know what you would call the group that is doing the testing, and this isn't even a live audience, right? So they're listening to it recorded. 100% of the response of which they preferred was in the experimental group.
Oh, that's fascinating.
So that there is something tangible, yeah, alive, yeah, visceral. Look, I'm getting goosebumps.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah,
always the moment. So my thing about any kind of training, whether it's audition or whatever it is, it's fine if you've schooled yourself in learning things perfectly, but you have to then know it and then throw it and play ball in the moment. And when you do, when you leave, like she says, you have left an impression, a footprint, an essence of something, intangible,
mm-hmm,
but tangible,
because
energetic.
You inserted your part energetically into it.
The way
it.
You do it.
I love
and that.
That
can't be taught. I mean, it is. That's what I teach.
Yeah.
But it can't be taught like as a mathematical equation, you know, because it's just your way.
Yeah.
But if you're not being taught to do it your way, nobody will stand out if everybody goes in and does things the perfect audition technique way.
Trying to do it right.
Yeah, that's totally it. Yeah. Dove had her breakthrough by deciding this isn't how I want to do it. I want to do it the way I would do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why every other girl probably went in and did it the way they thought they had to do it, or the way that the notes, you know, were sort of firing in their mind,
mm-hmm,
based on what the cast director said. You have to be willing to be like, I'm doing it.
Yeah, I'm doing it my way.
Yeah.
Because the thing is about that is so perfect, because the consequences of not doing it your way are terrible. In any case,
totally
however
it.
That goes out.
Yeah.
So it's like, in a way, it's the only choice you should ever make.
That's totally it.
Yeah.
Well, I always say too, is like, they're going to like you or not like you regardless. Isn't it better for you to have the experience, and if you're firing from all cylinders as yourself and they don't like you, well, so be it. Isn't that better for you than really holding yourself back and trying to be somebody you're not and they don't like you?
Being liked for something incredibly inauthentic that you then have to like keep
the mask
the facade
alive
for the next 4 years.
Oh, yeah,
maybe.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Well, so speaking of auditions, any
tips?
Help, any hot tips for self-tapes? Because self-tapes,
oh, yeah, that's good,
are something that, you know, man, that's a way of life for a lot of actors.
Yeah, I think that the key is in the eyes. And again, it's in listening. So I coached somebody yesterday for something, and he had all the lines down memorized perfectly, but there wasn't a lot of wiggle room in, like right now I'm looking at your eyes, and you're processing what I'm saying through feeling and listening. Now you would go to your text. But because we learn our lines, we just kind of say our lines back. And actors end up getting kind of deer, and I call it deer in the headlights look in their eyes, right? So they're kind of, they almost have it memorized, but not quite. They don't really feel comfortable. They're scared to work at the page. So they're trying to recall the line. So they're not really listening. They're just, they're waiting for you to shut up with your cue so that I can now say my kind of memorized line.
And you can actually almost see them reading it.
Oh, no, you can see it in their minds. Like what you were just doing. Like, you can see
eyes
it.
Eyes are up. They're running across the imaginary page.
It's not. So I'm always like, so when I coach somebody, I'm always like, okay, let's do it again in your own words. Okay, let's do it again in improv. Okay, let's do it again in... It's the lines. The lines really mess with people's heads because they get scared if they deviate. I'm not saying that you should do a full-on improv as your self-tape, but it's okay if you put a couple words as filler words in there to help you reduce the amount of times you try to say something perfectly. You're not going to not get the job because you say the word... I think you should leave my home. And the line is, I want you to get out of my house.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If it's coming from the moment, you're like, I think you should leave my home. That's fine.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to notice that. Yeah. Nobody's going to notice because you're so authentic in the moment. But what actors do is they stop. And they're like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Let me repeat.
Don't take out points because I messed up the line.
And if you're in the room, I mean, I'm going off topic, but if you're in the room and you all of a sudden stop and go back and retract yourself, then the casting director is like, wait, something just happened. Half the time they don't even know.
Yep.
And I don't mean that they're not doing a good job. I just mean they're processing so much information. They're not scanning each word perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
So my thing about self-tapes is you just got to listen. You've got to listen. You know, I always talk to agents and managers, and they see the self tapes of their clients, and they always tell me the same thing. They're like, "Why are they acting? Why don't they just say it?" And that's what I teach. Why can't you just speak it the way you speak in real life?
Yeah, without some sort of layer.
Yes,
of pretense.
Acting
on top
it. Stop acting it. See, even agents and managers know. Just say it.
So you're starting to deal with more young people. You've actually dealt with teenagers for a long time anyway, even if it's not been official.
Yeah.
So inevitably you deal with parents because you're dealing with people underage. Any advice for parents who are trying to help their kids get some traction?
Well, they should read your book.
Aww,
I mean, nice plug there. I'll square up with you later. You have the market on that, and your book is so great about, I mean, my thing is obviously you're still their parent and you have to parent them in ways. But I think if you think of acting, this is coming to me right now. I think if you think of acting, and I'm not a parent, so, you know, forgive me if I'm a little more wild and free in my advice here. But if you're a parent and your cop kid wants to enroll in soccer practice or swim practice, you allow them to play soccer. You allow them to swim. Now, yes, I grew up swimming, and there were parents who were, like, hardcore cheering their kids on and making sure those kids swam times that they had to swim, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Hurry it up!
Driving them, basically.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the reason why I'm using sport as an analogy is they have more free rein to be out of the eye of the parent. And I think, even though this may become a career for a child, you never know. My ideas change all the time. Half the time, I just want to go live somewhere else and do something else. So why would your 15-year-old daughter or son not, by the time they're 24, decide that they want to be an engineer or an astronaut?
And why wouldn't that be okay?
Exactly. So I think they have to be more hands-off.
Mm-hmm.
Hands-off.
Mm-hmm.
Guide them, mentor them, parent them in things that they need to be parented on. Behavior and professionalism and showing up, and it may be a hobby that's turning into something more substantial, but I think you gotta let a teenager be a teenager, a kid be a kid, and not become, you know, well, we have names for parents who become, I think you cannot live vicariously your stuff through your child.
That never, ever, ever ends well. Yeah.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah. So, and it's tricky. Even the best parents with the best of
intentions,
they can get sucked in because
of course.
It's pretty.
It's very provocative, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a pretty attractive world.
Well, as you know, though, you're a great social equalizer. You realize now, seeing it and being on set, it's just a job.
It is.
It's just a job. It's not that glamorous.
No.
I mean, it's
anti-glamorous.
It's
frankly.
Really not.
It's a
work.
Bunch of work. Yeah.
She shows up. How long is that show on? 3 years?
Four
years.
Yeah.
She had to show up onset, how long would they take? For 3 months? 4 months?
Depended on the length of the season. 6 to 8.
And there
usually.
You go.
Yeah.
12-hour days sometimes, longer.
12 for her when it was filming. Yeah,
that's work.
It's real work.
It's work. It's like going waiting tables. Okay, yes, you get to wear your pajamas sometimes and like pop out of a cake and, you know, throw water in somebody's face. It's a little bit more fun. But sometimes, I'm sure she woke up some days and was like, Mom, you know what I mean?
I'm over it. I don't want to get out of bed today. It's like, yeah, well, guess what? There's 100 people waiting for you on set, so you need to.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, at its best, it can really, you know, having a child who's an actor can encourage some incredible good habits, some discipline,
yeah.
You know, some professionalism, et cetera. If they're lucky, they can have mentors around them teaching them good life skills. But it's real work, and that shouldn't be glossed over. Well, what about the kids themselves? You know, I've got a lot of young kids who reach out to me, like, say you're 12 years old and you live in the middle of the country, you're nowhere near L.A. or New York, and your dream is to be an actor. What do you think are some of the best ways for those kids who are still kids, mm-hmm. who don't have a shot at being out here right now, to move toward their dream right where they are?
Wow, that's a good question. I mean, I think, you know, you do talk a little bit about success in your book. I don't know if this really speaks to that, but, like, you know, what does success mean anyway? You know, I think, again, it's like soccer practice. Do you enjoy it?
Yeah.
Are you having fun? Are you meeting friends? Are you playing? Is it something you've always wanted to do? So maybe you get involved in a community program, or you get involved in something, you know, at your school. Or, you know, nowadays there's social media platforms where not only just being your own YouTube spokesperson, like lifestyle person, you can do skits and film them. You know, Steven Spielberg started making movies when he was like 14, 15, 16 years old.
Yeah, like with his family's
video
camera.
Yeah, like Super 8 cameras. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I think if you don't have the resources to move to L.A. or New York, I think those are ways to start.
Mm-hmm.
And you may discover, oh, you're also a filmmaker. You're also a poet. You're also, you know, a theologian or a mm-hmm. philosopher.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much more Renaissance-like than you're just an actor. I mean, that goes for adults as well. We are so much... I don't like actors to constantly be defined just by their acting.
I agree so
It's
much.
Not healthy. And, you know, if you look at actors and the way they're sort of mediafied, at the end of the day, they're just people. It's silly in a way how we... I get it. I talk about this in the first book. We have no mythology in our culture. We just have no mythology. So we
mythologize. Mythologize.
It's like they're just like you and I. They're doing a job.
Yeah, and because we mythologize the stars, I think it makes it feel even more sort of all or nothing.
Mm,
like,
mm-hmm.
I live in Iowa, and I'm 12 years old, and I can't go to L.A. right now because my parents won't
let me. Yeah.
So it's all or nothing, and I'm not even going to try out for the school play. It's like, no, try out for the school play and see what that leads to. Because it'll lead to more school plays, which may lead to you starting to write screenplays, which may lead to the writing program in New York when you're 18.
Absolutely.
You know, you don't know.
No, you don't know.
But if you don't start, you will never, never, never get anywhere.
I also think, again, you talk about that in the success stuff, but like not going to an end product. You can't, especially at that age. Also, listen, I know some adults who are in the business and they have kids, and they're like, if she or he wants to act, they can do it, but not until they're 18.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, listen, I'm not a parent, but I think that's also maybe great, because the beautiful thing about acting, as long as you're a human being, and you're going to be a human being your entire life, you can act whenever you want. So, you know, maybe you're not supposed to start acting when you're 12. There's lots of 12, 13, 14, you and I talked about this, 15, 16-year-olds who get leads on their own shows. Those shows run for 3 years. Those shows get canceled. Those kids never work again.
Yeah, and then where are they?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
If you don't have a relationship with your parents that's more total than just being a breadwinner for the household, what happens when that dries up? You think you're a failure, that's just too much.
Well, that's what happens if you identify with being an actor, as you were just saying. And that's where it's dangerous for anybody at any age, maybe especially for kids.
Yeah, yeah.
But adults can fall prey to that issue too.
Well, I mean, we can name lots of tragic, fallen, beautiful children actors who then don't work, and their whole self-esteem and self-worth was tied up in it. It's really...
you know, something that is bigger than mm-hmm. this work, mm-hmm. you know, something like family mm-hmm. or a spiritual practice mm-hmm. or something, mm-hmm. something that can't get taken away from
yeah,
them,
yeah, yeah.
you know? And I think that that's the secret for people involved in this industry. Can it can be very unbalancing,
mm-hmm.
you know? Any final thoughts for young actors or parents of young actors who are hoping to make a career in film or TV?
Well, I think, you know, again, I think they should get your book. I really do. I'm not just plugging you because you have me as your guest, but like I think the most important thing is making sure the kid, the child, the preteen, the teen is in it for the real right reasons. And I think that's being distorted more and more now because I work with some parents of kids where the pressures of having a social media profile or the presentation of their daughter in a certain way. Maybe boys as well, but it feels a little bit more the sexualization of young girls.
I agree.
As a man, if I were a dad, I don't know. My brother and my sister-in-law have a 7-year-old. They don't even let her. They are doing everything they can to shield her from any kind of social media awareness. And I think it's important because it starts to distort your own image. And so, anyway, my point is maybe this is the new, you know, rules of the game. But just like anything, I think we have to have some sort of balance around it. And it's not who you are. You're not these images. You're not. So I think we have to, if parents really, you have to make sure the kid really wants to create and tell
mm-hmm.
stories.
Mm-hmm.
And really not because I want to be famous.
That's
a very shallow. Listen, the trick
that
is
no, we're good.
The trick is I think I wanted that when I was 18 or 19 and I started, you know, and then I realized, in other words, it's not sustainable.
No.
It's just not sustainable. It's not real.
So if you want your life and what you do with it to be sustainable, it has to be coming from an authentic place, not from gratification that comes from the outside. It has to come from the inside.
Totally. I mean, look at, that's the path we're all on. I think people who are really hugely famous too would give anything to not be in, you know. I also think it's an interesting challenge, right? Because you look at someone like Meryl Streep, she's never in the gossip rack. She's not out there. So you also have a control over it. Mm-hmm. Now, I would think that a lot of your handlers would probably make you believe, oh, you have to be out there and you have to be doing this and you have to be with this person. You have to get seen at this event. You have to go out to this. You have to brand this thing. And I don't know if you do. I don't think Meryl Streep did that. I don't think, you know what I mean? Nicole Kidman doesn't do that. Ryan Gosling doesn't do that. You can decide for yourself. You also mentioned that in the book, which I thought was really great. Are you choosing it because I get the monetary aspect of things and people want to make a living, but are you making choices only for that, which then corrupt the reason why you're doing it in the first place?
Exactly. And let's be honest, most actors don't make much money, if any. You know, I mean, it's from a numbers standpoint, it's not a good bet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no,
you better
right.
be doing it because
yeah.
you love it.
Love
yeah.
it. I always say, and I'm the number one advocate of creatives and artists. I had a blog not too long ago about everybody in Congress should take an acting class. So I really believe acting is healing our planet. But I think if there's something else you love as much as acting, you should pursue it. And another way of thinking about it is just be open to everything. You can be an actor and a writer and a singer and an astronaut and a teacher and a tapestry weaver. You can be a painter and a musician and a poet and, you know, a dancer. You
yeah.
can do, you can make wine and sell cheese and have your own bistro and tell stories. Like, why do we?
No, life is big. Life is big. And maybe you can't do all of those things at the same time.
No.
But if your life is big enough and long enough, you can do a lot of those things eventually.
Yeah. Stay open, I think, Bonnie, is the thing of, like, not just identifying yourself as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be doing all the things that I'm doing if I only thought I could be. I talk about that in the book, is that creativity is infinite, but we identify with finite labels of who we think we are,
yeah.
which also becomes its own prison.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. And then that shuts down our self-expression and makes us worse actors.
That's really true.
And unhappier humans.
That's true.
Well, I love the work that you're doing.
Well, thank you so much.
I mean,
I guess we could talk forever.
We could. And I know we got to
yeah.
wrap it.
Yeah,
but
that's really amazing. Well, so, yes, get all of our books.
Get all of our books. They'll be listed in the show notes.
Thanks, Bonnie. That was so amazing.
Wasn't that fun?
It was really fun.
Thanks for listening to Hometown to Hollywood. If you like what you heard here, subscribe to this free podcast and leave a quick rating and review. A moment to click on a star rating really helps, and a minute to write a sentence-long review makes a real difference in the ranking for this podcast. Thank you so much for helping me. Do you want to know more about getting a young actor up and running in Hollywood? Buy my book, The Hollywood Parents Guide, on Amazon. And if you need specific help getting your career or your child's career up and running or to the next level, you can get a one-on-one consultation with me over Skype or in person in Los Angeles. Go to my website, hollywoodparentsguide.com, and click on the consultations page. Thanks, and see you next week.